are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, it's Earth Day. Get ready to drink the stuff you flush down your toilet. After all the abuse you dole out at the restaurant, the bitchy waiter is going to exact his revenge right here on the program. Who lives in those tiny houses we see on television? A guy who builds them joins us live. And Manny the Movie Guy joins us from Coachella. That's right. Joining me on the show is the man behind Gonzo FM, storied rock radio DJ, Gonzo Greg Spillane.
Thank you, Phil. Hey, the Grim Reaper having a very busy year so far, and as you've probably heard, he has at this point taken royalty, and we'll be talking about that shortly.
Keeping an eye on what you guys are up to when you're just sitting around, the host of Sweet Life, the podcast, and the producer of this show, Brooke Peterson.
All I can say is, yay! Hooray! It's about time. Stay tuned, and I'll tell you what the heck I'm talking about.
If you listen to this show on iTunes, hooray! I thought that was where we were doing that today. Thanks for leaving the comment and a 5-star review. You're helping the show when you do that because the folks over at iTunes, they read your comments. They really do, and they notice your 5-star reviews. It means a lot to me as well. So if you don't want to break my heart, get over there and do that. Will you please? Thank you. I'm so sensitive about these things.
All right. Bill is known for sensitivity.
Yeah, and everybody's feeling a little weepy today because of a music icon passing away. And if you've been living under a rock, then you don't know. This will be new to you, but everybody, I think, knows this. I mean, this is like Elvis, like Michael Jackson. When those guys died, it was huge news. And maybe you disagree with me, but I'm going to go with that. And tell us, Greg, about the passing of Prince.
Yeah, Prince yesterday morning officially announced just around 10 o'clock yesterday morning is when we got the official word. But once again, TMZ batting 1,000% with your accuracy. You know, this is one of those stories you hear you don't want to believe. You know, that can't be true.
Well, they've got a guy assigned to almost every celebrity who just camps out in the yard next to a bush, right?
Well, they are everywhere. So. That is true.
And the moment something happens, they're there.
Yeah, well, because it was initially reported that there was a fatality at Prince's place, and so then when I heard news that you know Prince was dead, I refused to believe it. I'm like, no, you've got the story wrong. They found somebody, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I guess the person was Prince, and yeah, he is gone, and a great outpouring of support from everybody. I was never that big of a fan, but I certainly understand his talent and amazing, prolific producer of music, too. Yeah. They say, you know, obviously it's unclear at this point, you know, who gets the estate or what have you. But apparently he has so much music in his vault, which is literally a vault in the basement of his place there, also where his studio is, that I think he can release an album a year for the rest of the century.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that something?
Really?
Just amazing. Yeah.
Amazing. Literally? Wow. That's great.
But for a guy who has no heirs, I mean, who's getting it? I mean, if you watch the movie Purple Rain, you know that he was estranged from his dad and didn't have a great time with his mom, from what I recall the storyline being, and it was autobiographical.
Oh.
And so who's he leaving the money for?
Yeah.
Apollonia is my guess.
or the Bengals, maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
It looks like, you know, that emergency plane landing, what was it, last week, a couple weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
They said the flu, but apparently it was opiates, and it looks like it was probably Percocet that he had developed a problem with. He went in for surgery for a hip problem around 2010 or so, and it looks like one of those cases where you know, end up with a doctor that overprescribes your, you know, pain meds, and you end up, you know.
That is so common, isn't it?
Yeah, it happens a lot. It's a huge problem.
And when you can't get the pain meds anymore because the doctor is getting some heat and he cuts you off, then you go straight to heroin because it's basically the same drug.
It's a huge problem. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know, of course, obviously we were speculating, but I don't think that was the problem here.
No. Mm-hmm.
There were sightings of him at his regular Walgreens there in Minneapolis like regularly over the last few days. And apparently he had a doctor that didn't cut him off.
Yeah.
Is what everybody's
his saying. Compound, his house, his mansion, whatever you want to call it. Paisley Park. Is that
Paisley
what
Park.
It?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Prince Rogers Nelson, his original name. Everybody's got a Prince story. The one that is indelible in my memory is, I want to say it was 1981, maybe you can correct me on the year, executive producer Mike Stark, that the Rolling Stones were playing the Coliseum with their supporting acts were, I want to say it was George Thorogood, it was Jay Giles, maybe somebody else, a whole lot of blue-eyed soul. And then Prince was the opening act.
I was going to ask you if you were at that show.
I was at that show.
And yeah.
And Prince came out and played, and and let me just put it in stark terms. All the white folk in the audience started throwing tennis shoes at him.
He was not well received.
Really?
No, it was a moment I'm not proud to have witnessed, but I'm glad I did because we've come a long way. But it, when to think about it, 1980. Come on, mm-hmm. A black guy comes out on stage. Albeit he was wearing boa feathers and lace and stuff like that, but just the same, the dude can play a guitar. The dude can write a song, and he was something special at that time already. And he stormed off the stage with his band after two or three songs. And I remember the announcement he made after that, that was carried in the media, was that he would never play live again.
Mm.
I'm glad he changed his mind.
Glad he changed his mind, yeah. Because an amazing performer. I got to see him with Lenny Kravitz when I lived in Minneapolis for a while. Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's our, rest in peace, but Lenny Kravitz helps me transition to our first story from you, Brooke.
Okay.
There's a cryptic reference there that because when I say Lenny Kravitz, my wife immediately goes back to her phone and looks at that video she saved when Lenny squatted on stage and his junk fell right out of his pants.
What? When was that?
You missed that? Okay. The first commercial break we take, you have permission to go look for that, Brooke.
Wow.
that can be in your browser history too.
So that's our transition to your first story. You see how I do this?
Well, yes. You know, that was brilliant, really. So actually, so what's happening right now that I'm so excited about, and, you know, thank goodness for all this happening now, is that now people can be fined, or I guess not people, men in particular, men who like to take up their space on public transit and spread their legs as wide as they can possibly get, can be fined. Ha ha.
Oh, come on. Mad spreading. You know why we have to spread?
I don't care why you have to spread.
Do you carry a small animal between your legs all day long? You know,
there's so many jokes and so much censorship right now.
There's all kinds of stuff going on, you know, with a guy. Ladies, I know you have your own issues, and they probably dwarf a man's issues. Okay, yes, they do dwarf a man's issues with the stuff going on down there for you ladies. But for us guys, it's a comfort issue. And for one brief moment, on a train, on a bus, please grant us a moment of comfort, will you?
No!
Is this really an issue? Is this really happening?
Not really happening.
I don't
think so. Public campaigns in New York and San Francisco and soon in L.A. talking about men. Close your legs.
Yeah. You know what? Every now and then I'll think, all right, I'm going to cross my legs. Not the kind, you know, where your leg and your foot is... at a right angle with the ground, but the other kind, you know, like the lady cross your leg style, which a lot of guys do, and I don't fault them for doing that. I've done that plenty of times, and it seems like the way you cross your legs on a talk show on TV. And every now and then I'll do that, and I'll go, oh, I shouldn't have done that.
Well, now you can be fined $100 if you don't do that. Boom.
$100.
$100. I really wish, because the thing is, the fact is that this is not necessarily a new fine. Apparently, people could be fined $75 before, but I've never seen it happen.
Where's this? Where's this happening?
It's all about enforcement.
Is it statewide here in California? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Now, New York had a deal with this too on the subways, right? Didn't they go after?
I think it's universal. I think everybody.
Oh, you lie.
I do not.
Okay,
I
you don't
see it
lie.
Being.
Men do this worldwide.
The problem in New York City where people actually use public transportation, where it actually exists, but Southern California, I mean, I don't know, what is it, still the RTD? What do they call it? The bus now. I mean, there's like six people on there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if there's space, then, you know, spread out as much as you want. But if it's during rush hour and people are standing there and they can't sit down because of your legs all over the place, then that's not cool.
Legs all over the place. I think you're getting a little extreme here.
Am I?
Yeah.
Am I?
Yeah. All right. Hey, either of you see the movie Ex Machina?
I did.
Ex Machina. You saw it, Greg?
Yeah.
You want a robot lady like that, don't you? Not one that's going to kill you, but you know. You know what I mean? All the stuff prior to getting killed by the robot. You want all that stuff, right?
I'm on the fence on that.
Are you?
Given my struggles with technology most days.
Women.
Yeah.
And women. Four wives and a bunch of XP computers. I don't know. That doesn't sound like a good thing for me.
Well, maybe it's the best thing for you.
Apparently, science has made this possible, and she's waiting for you now. And Brooke knows all about her, and we'll introduce you to her next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, you're listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. We thank you for that. Hey, guys, let's think back to before CDs were around, when you had all the vinyl. There was a first album that was on CD, the very first one. And Mike Stark, executive producer, you could play along. Gonzo, you were a DJ in the early 80s, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so was I. And Brooke, were you ever a DJ? Were you ever playing music on the radio? No?
No.
But you're a consumer of music.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Lover.
You're not quite a lover. You're not, and you like music. And you aren't quite old enough to remember the early 80s. I know that.
Ish.
Now, who among you thinks they know what the first ever CD was? The first album to be released on CD? Anybody want to take a guess?
My guess would be Dire Straits.
That's Mike.
Why?
Okay. Mike says Dire Straits. That's a good
Why?
Guess.
Well, because they were early in the digital age as well. They were one of the first bands. I don't know if they were the first band, but they were one of the first that actually recorded an album digitally.
Money for Nothing? Is that the
that whatever album that was.
Yes. Yeah.
I'll say Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson. Okay. How about you, Greg? What do you think?
I was going to say Pink Floyd, The Wall, because it was originally, but I think I'm wrong because it was originally supposed to be recorded digitally.
Yeah.
And then somebody snuck in and got the studio before they did or something.
That's about the right time, but I remember buying The Wall, and it was vinyl when I bought it.
I remember buying it on vinyl, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, the first ever CD, and Brooke is actually the closest in going with a super pop star. The first ever CD was Living Eyes by the Bee Gees in 1981.
Really?
Yeah.
Bee Gees.
And that,
wow.
Yeah, right? You're saying, what? That?
Did that really need to be recorded and released digitally?
No.
Or did it really need to be recorded and released at all?
But it's cool when you think about it, when there is musical trivia, for it to be something that you would never think about. And so now that you know, memorize that and dazzle your friends at your cocktail parties.
I think I'll take a pass on that, Bill.
Go ahead. All right. So I'm thinking that the future is both wonderful and grim for humans on this planet because of the speed at which thinking, feeling, autonomous robots are being developed. And I'm thinking, well, on the good side, robots are going to do everything for us. We won't even need humans anymore. We just get a pretty robot at home, do all the housework and, you know, all the other stuff that, you know, like Leif Garrett said once on TV, I've got needs, Buffy.
That's quite a pull, Phil.
Yeah. And so for those needs, you have your robot girlfriend, right? But eventually she's going to go full ex machina on you, and she's going to kill you and your friends and head straight for the seat of government and take over the world. Brooke, tell me about the robot who has yet to kill anybody, but promises to provide a great deal of fun love and service to mm-hmm. whoever it is that's in charge.
Yeah, well, I think the term girlfriend implies all of the above. So in China, they have taken new steps to this ultimate autonomous, free-thinking robot. And this woman is named Jia Jia, G-I-A, or J-I-A, J-I-A. How would you say it?
I'd say Jai Jai.
Jai Jai.
Yes.
So, yeah, she's like this really attractive robot. Took them 3 years to make her. She's beautiful. She responds to visual stimuli. She can hold conversation. She can respond to questions and direct people around her. She can, I mean, she's pretty much, she's, it's yep. kind of freakishly
You want to see what Brooke's talking about? Go to our show fun page and you will say, no, that's not a robot. That's a real lady pretending to be a robot. The guy, the evil scientist who invented her, is standing there demonstrating her like the guy in King Kong. You're talking to the audience. He brings out King Kong. Well, he brings out this gorgeous woman.
He looks so proud of himself. And when he says hello to the robot, guess what she says?
Can I give you a reach around? It's in Chinese. I don't know. That may not be the literal translation.
Well, she basically is saying that because what she does say is, yes, my lord, what can I do for you?
Well, let me think of two or three things.
And then he says, you know, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
Where do you think this is going?
Oh, and does he demonstrate that in the video? You'll have to watch to find out.
Does she, like, walk around like a person?
Greg, you're not going to think she's a robot when you look
really?
At her. Yeah, you think it's going to be. No, that's just some lady pretending to be a robot.
So he's not wheeling her out like, on a hand truck, like Hannibal Lecter or something like that. She's like walking around and functioning like a humanoid.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's totally. Creepy as hell.
And she's kind of, you know, if you're into the Asian babe thing, she's kind of hot.
Oh, she's beautiful. Yeah. And a girlfriend.
Yeah. You don't even have to work at it now. You don't have no fear of rejection. Nothing.
That's the thing. Although I wonder, if she does become as autonomous as they're thinking and as it seems like she might be already, you know, when she does get angry, what does that mean?
Straight for the butcher knife.
That's right. And that superhuman strength, I'm sure, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, that comes in handy for some things, but not for that. I don't want my robot girlfriend to kill me. Can we figure out how not to make
that
happen?
Yourself.
I've had way too many robot girlfriends. I don't know. Yes, dear.
Yeah. Well, anyway, go check that out. Now, here's something I can't explain. Greg, tell me about this kindergarten teacher you know. Apparently a good friend of yours.
not personally, mainly because she's from China. So we really have to thank China for all the big news today. So.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently in China, a kindergarten teacher there has decided, since her students are so rambunctious and have so much energy, that she would organize a fight club so that they would calm down. So in order to get the kids to calm down, she'd just turn them loose on each other in kindergarten fight club.
Did she tell them, whatever you do, rule number one is don't talk about fight club?
Well, apparently somebody did, and to their parents when they came home all bruised up.
Oh, man.
The ensuing bare-knuckle battles, which apparently happened last Friday, 5 boys were injured. One kid's spine was knocked out of alignment.
Ooh.
Yeah, and there were X-rays.
Are these kids all in Taekwondo or what?
Apparently, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, apparently the program has been discontinued. Is no longer.
Oh, what a shame.
I know,
Think
right?
of the money they could raise for the PTA.
So, yeah.
Oh, man, that's crazy. All right, so the fight club has been canceled. I'm crossing that off.
That's so sad because it seemed like such a solid idea.
Yeah.
Nothing could possibly go wrong with that concept.
Hey, Greg, my daughter drives a VW Jetta, and she's been trying to unload that heap for a couple of years, but she can't figure out how to do it because, you know, she's upside down on the thing, and it's worth less than what she owes on it, and she's trying to find a deal somehow, and every time she goes into a dealership, they say, yeah, come on in, we'll figure out a deal. But then they say, well, you owe more than it's worth, and
right.
So you got to cut us
a check.
Does
she have one of the ones that's the polluting ones? Does she have one of those?
Or I'm not sure. I'm really not, but... Is VW going to do anything about that?
There's a tentative agreement now from the U.S. District Court that says that VW will buy back those polluting cars, the ones they lied about,
mm-hmm.
or make repairs, and that would be your choice. The details are still sketchy. I mean, we all have a ton of questions about this, particularly if you own one. You know, how much are you going to expect to get, you know, in a buyback? Will you be compensated for reduced gas mileage or performance, you know, if you get the repair done, especially the diesels?
But, you know, in legal terms, though, what if you feel like you've been harmed or wronged by association with the company that lied to so many people? And you don't have the diesel model, but you have another model, and you feel like somehow, hey, you know what, I shouldn't have to drive around town in a vehicle with the nameplate on it from a company that has done wrong to so many people.
Well, here's some duct tape. Put it over the logo. Get over it.
Oh, that's legal. That's legalese right there, isn't it?
Right. See, I cut to the chase. But they say there will be substantial compensation for owners, is the quote. Yeah. Obviously, that still has to be worked out. Volkswagen, it's speculated, will be spending over $1 billion to compensate owners in this whole fiasco.
Yeah. All right.
But there's still going to be some back and forth in terms of you'll have to file. It'll be, I guess, like a class action suit. So you'll have to get into the class action or something. Yeah. That's all still being figured out, but at least there's progress being made.
Yeah, good. I'll look into it. Hey, our first guest on the program is going to do her best to make you thirsty. You may have heard the phrase over the years, from toilet to tap. Well, I don't know if that's exactly what's happening anywhere in America, but if it is, how does that sit with you? And is the technology that's available today good enough to make the stuff you flush crisp, clear, and delicious to drink? Is drinking the reclaimed water or maybe watering the lawn with it the only option these days? Maybe there's a whole lot more. You're going to find out in our next segment when we talk to an expert right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. When you do your business in the bathroom and you flush your toilet, that's pretty much the point at which you wipe away any memory of what you just flushed out, and it goes out of your mind, right? You don't put
unless
a lot of...
unless you're a true artist, Phil.
All right, Picasso. Now, you don't put a lot of thought into where it goes after you pull the lever, do you?
Research I'll do my best to not think about it.
Yeah, me too. The research is being done, however, to find more uses for the organic solids, shall we call them, that come from the treatment of what you flush down your toilet every day. And joining us live is an associate professor of civil and environmental engineering at Michigan Tech who knows a thing or two about this. Jennifer Becker, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, and happy Earth Day.
Well, thanks, and it's appropriate that we're talking about this today because we want to be of a mind to where we use everything that we use and use everything that comes from that use and maybe get another use out of it. There's a long way of saying we want to recycle things best we can. Now, in this instance, are we talking about turning the stuff we flush down to the toilet into something we would pour into a drinking glass?
We're not quite there yet.
But you want to be there, don't you?
We do want to be there. And I think we're really seeing a big paradigm shift in the United States with respect to wastewater and water treatment, and increasingly they may become one and the same. But the work that I'm doing is a little bit different in nature, and if I might, I'd like to talk a little bit about that.
Yes, of course. I've got plenty of questions because I find this fascinating that, you know, because up until this point, think about all the stuff we've flushed and it's just gone into the ocean, right?
Right, right, yeah. Or into our lakes and rivers. So the problem with that, just discharging this untreated wastewater into water bodies, is that we've known for a long time that there are a number of constituents in that wastewater that are harmful to our aquatic ecosystems. And that's mainly organic matter, as you mentioned, and also nutrients. And then there's all the pathogens that we excrete, and those can be really detrimental to human health. And really, wastewater treatment got started because of those human health concerns. And so we primarily treated wastewater to eliminate pathogens, and we got rid of all those cholera outbreaks that used to kill thousands of people at a time in the 1800s. And so that's been a big advance. But when we treat wastewater, some people may not realize that we generate a lot of solids in the process. And most of these solids are, in fact, bacteria that have removed that organic matter and those nutrients from the water flow, from the wastewater. And they assimilate a lot of that organic matter and nutrients into their cells. So those solids aren't really human waste, as you might think, but they are really enriched in the things that we've removed from wastewater, the things that are harmful to aquatic ecosystems and us.
And it would take about a half an hour to explain the process in which we get this down to the point where you've got a bucket
semester.
Full of stuff, right? Yeah.
Yeah, wow. It takes me a whole semester to teach my students. But I guess the gist of it is that the organic matter and the nutrients are harmful to our aquatic ecosystems. They do all kinds of bad things. But they're really useful if we apply them to land in certain applications. We can restore lands that have been damaged by mining or brownfields in cities, damaged by industrial processes, or we can use them to produce agricultural crops. But the thing is, we've got those pathogens in there, and we those are obviously not beneficial. And so before we can reuse these wastewater solids, the EPA requires that we have to really rigorously treat them to reduce the pathogens to safe levels.
All right, so you're talking about the wastewater. How about the solids from the waste solids, if you know what I mean? Because I'm gathering that we break our waste into two categories, for lack of a sophisticated example, number one and number two.
Right. Well, those number two solids that you're talking about, they also get basically broken down by the bacteria. So the bacteria really don't care. It all gets kind of mixed together, and these, they're really transforming it. So again, when I say solids, I'm not talking about, you know, the fecal matter and things like that. It gets converted into bacterial cells, and then we settle out those bacteria, and those are now what we're going to reuse. And they've basically stuffed themselves with nutrients and organic matter, and so we've got some really beneficial material.
Yeah, and you pack those materials into like cupcake tins, and you ship them off to farmers, and they use them as fertilizer. Isn't that right?
Well, not exactly, but you could think of it that way. It does contain these plant nutrients and organic matter, which improves the soil properties.
Now, I'm always interested in the life of a scientist, and I'm going to. You are a scientist, isn't that right? Do you consider yourself
I'm
one?
I'm a scientist and an engineer.
Okay.
So I don't just study problems, I solve them, but I have to understand the science.
Now, there's a lot of trial and error that goes on in the laboratory. I know that. And that I find fascinating. And we always see in the movies, you know, the guy that's trying to, this is what happened to the Incredible Hulk, right? The guy decides, okay, I'm just going to inject this self into me and inject this poison into me and see what happens, and he turns into the Hulk. So I'm thinking in the laboratory, because at the beginning of our conversation, you said, oh, I do hope we get there to where the waste that we flush down the toilet can end up in our drinking glass. So the question is, have you been involved in any tests where you and your colleagues have actually tasted anything?
No, I haven't. But I do want to come back to your point, because technologically, we can convert wastewater. We can treat it to a level where you could just stick your drinking glass out there and drink it. The reason why I said I hope we get there is mostly one of just public perception.
Right. Psychologically, we're not there. We right. can't go there. I mean, that's why we're not eating crickets, by and large. Right? But other parts of the world are.
Well, they had Bill Gates on TV, last year, you know, drinking reclaimed water or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, it didn't help, did it?
Get your head around that one.
I think it is. I think it is helping. And I think this is just great that we can educate people about this. So, it's kind of a weird business to be in, or many people might think it's strange that I'm so passionate about wastewater and cleaning it up and dealing with these solids. But I kind of see some parallels to what's happening, parallels to the sustainable food movement. And we hear all the time about how the mainstream food systems are really disconnecting our society from food origins, and we're having all these negative health impacts as a result. And, these mainstream food systems are unsustainable because of the energy that they use. They consume natural resources, and they have this negative impact on the environment. And if you think about it, waste is, like food or energy, an integral part of life. And I think that as a society, we're even more disconnected from our waste, whether we're talking about the solid waste that goes into a landfill or the waste that, as you said, we flush down the toilet. we're more disconnected from that than we are from our food. And I think there's really grave consequences to this societal disconnect, you know, when we think about the sustainability of our infrastructure and climate change and water quality
right,
and availability.
Right. Now, there's two kinds of waste. There's the stuff that you're talking about, that we've been talking about. Then there's the other kind of waste where you just don't use something that's right there in front of your face. And back to the water for a second, because as our urban areas get more and more dense, the demand for clean water outstrips the supply. I mean, it just makes total sense. Usually don't think of toilet water, but I do think of what happens when it rains and all that storm water follows the concrete channel right into the ocean. Is your research looking at solutions to capture any of that water? Because I tell you, I'm much more likely to drink that.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily the most pristine water either. So if you think about it, that picks up anything that's on the land surface, and that can be dog feces, from people who want their dogs, and fertilizer that you put on your lawn and all manner of things, oil and grease, metals that our car tires leave on the roadway. That's all in that stormwater as well. Granted, it's not as dirty as the municipal wastewater, but it's certainly not clean. But it's good that we're moving towards separating those flows from our wastewater flows, the things that we flush down the toilet, because in the past, and to some extent it still happens in large cities, those were combined. And when we exceeded the capacity of our sewers to handle that flow, then the whole shebang would go out to the ocean or to a river, including, you know, the raw sewage.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we're moving away from that. As far as my research, what I'm really focused on is those solids that we generate during wastewater treatment. And, again, there's lots of opportunities there to beneficially reuse them. There are lots of good things we can do with stormwater, and one of the big things that we want to do is get it back into the ground, not create it in the first place, and, you know, try to capture it where it's generated and get it to infiltrate so it can recharge our groundwater aquifers.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And I wish I could talk to you for another half hour, because this stuff fascinates me, and I think the better you get at your research and the more strides we make to the ends that you are hoping come in our lifetime, the better off we're going to be as a planet. And I really appreciate you spending some time with us here. Earth Day conversation. Jennifer Becker, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. All right. So you feel any smarter there, Brooke and Gonzo?
I'm doing my best.
Are you? Now you're
I just always remember somebody, you're always downstream from somebody.
Yeah.
It's always a frightening thought.
Hey,
that's why I moved out of Louisville, Kentucky. I'm like,
Louisville.
too far down the river for me.
We've all waited tables, haven't we?
Indeed.
Oh, yes. How about you, Greg? You ever been
waiting? No. Lots of snack bar, though.
No? Okay.
Right. Snack bar, but I never waited tables.
Those who have probably have some great stories and deep-seated disdain for crazy customers. Now, you are going to love our next guest, who has some great stories of his own about life on the other side of the menu. That's in our next segment of Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Remember Mussolini?
Well, not firsthand, no.
No, not personally. didn't used to party with him. He wasn't one of your bros, yeah.
Down at the Troub.
Well, he got into politics and became a fascist dictator, as you know. But before that, he worked as a teacher. Which makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
Wow.
Reminds me of a few of my profs, yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Mussolini? Can I go to the bathroom? Shoot him!
Clock is slow.
Yeah, right, yeah, that's going to work. Hey, joining us now is a self-proclaimed media whore who has been known to spend hours at a time linking his blog to every conceivable website that may get him more traffic. The New York Post featured him in an article entitled, "Should You Trust Your Server?" He's appeared on the Dr. Phil Show to discuss children's behavior in restaurants. Oh, there's one of my pet peeves. Let's say hello to the author of the book, The Bitchy Waiter, Tales, Tips, and Trials from a Life in Food Service, Darren Cardosa.
Hello. Hello. How are you?
I am well, even better now that you're here.
Oh, good. Happy to help.
Yeah. Oh, ooh. And thanks for acknowledging me right away, by the way. I was worried I'd be sitting here for 15 minutes before anyone said boo to me.
No, I only do that at work.
So tell me, what drove you to start blogging and ultimately writing a book about your experience waiting tables in restaurants?
Well, I've been waiting tables for so many years, pretty consistently for 30 years. I was pursuing an acting career, so the job went hand in hand with my other career.
Oh, of course.
And about 8 years ago, I just came home one day after a frustrating day at work and decided to start a blog just as a way to vent my frustration. And I started writing it for myself and for my friends and started sharing it. And I just kept it up because I enjoy writing. And after a few years, I thought, I think I have enough bitching that I could actually write a book about it. So that's what I did.
Why so frustrated? I mean, are customers at restaurants really that bad?
No, most of them are totally fine, but those aren't the ones that are fun to write stories about. So it's the ones who are in the minority, but those are the ones that take up more emotional space in my head.
What percentage of those customers would you say do at least one thing during the course of a meal that drives you nuts?
Probably only about 30%.
Well, 30? I thought you'd say like 5 or 10%. 30%, that's a lot.
30 sound like a lot?
Yes, it does. It's almost one in three.
I'm really picky.
Well, if you've got four tables, then that means all the time you have at least one table that's driving you nuts.
Well, maybe there's different degrees of being driven nuts. You know, there's a difference between one person who is just a complete egomaniac who's making me crazy and somebody else who's just being slightly annoying by continually asking for an extra napkin every single time I walk by. You know, that's not the end of the world for me, but if you need an extra napkin, and then I bring the extra napkin, and then when I get there, you say, oh, and can I get some extra ketchup? You go get the ketchup, and then they come back, and they say, can I get some water? That's not horribly annoying. It's a little bit annoying.
Yeah.
There are degrees of annoying, I guess.
I want to get into more of what the customers do in a moment, but let's explore the other side of the menu, as you put it. Should I trust my server?
Well, you should trust your server. Well, it depends on what you're asking them. If you're asking them the difference between a $38 entree and a $35 entree, there's a really good chance that the waiter has not actually tasted those entrees because they're far too expensive for him to pay for, and the kitchen's not going to give it to him for free. So if he tells you, this is so delicious, chances are he's just reciting something that he's heard a customer say.
Or steering you toward the most expensive item.
Possibly. You should trust your server, too, though, to believe that he's not going to manipulate your food or tamper with it just because you think that he may be slightly annoyed at you.
Really? I was thinking maybe it was going to go the other way, because if there are some waiters there who just, perhaps they weren't meant for the gig. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if they're sociopaths or what, but they shouldn't be interfacing with the public.
Yeah, that's true. But those servers are far and few between, really. And they have to be coupled with a really, really obnoxious customer at the same time. So I would say it has to be a perfect storm of circumstances for a server to do something horrible to someone's food. The customer has to be awful, the server has to be awful, and then the opportunity has to arise where he can actually get away with doing something.
So a table of 12 that asks for separate checks on the front end, that's not going to be an issue, is it?
No, that's not an issue. In fact, I'd rather know at the beginning than at the end, because I can set the table up that way at the beginning and know what's ahead of me. If you wait until the end and I put down one check and then 12 credit cards get thrown at me and everybody says, I don't know how much mine is, just figure it out.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's going to irritate me, and it's also going to take me a long time.
And it's too late to do anything to their food.
Right. Darn it, they already ate.
Now, I don't want to upset you or my server, obviously, but what should I never ask of my server?
I think there's a whole list of things in the book that I've said, but one that I always say is you should never ask your server, what's your real job?
That's so condescending, isn't it?
That doesn't make you feel great about being at work. You also should not ask for something free for your birthday because, you know, it's not that big of a deal. Everybody in the world has a birthday, and that doesn't mean everybody's entitled to a free piece of cake just because they were born. So don't ask your server what you get for your birthday because chances are he's just going to roll his eyes and say, you get my heartfelt congratulations.
Wow. Is it okay to say, all right, we're here tonight, we're celebrating my daughter's birthday. Just let the server know.
Yeah, it's one thing if it's a child, absolutely. You know, birthdays are still special and fun and exciting. But if you're 48 like I am and you go into a restaurant and ask what you get for your birthday, it seems a little bit pathetic to me.
You're 48, huh? Are you still waiting tables or are you now, is your real job author?
Well, I still wait tables. It's part-time. When I started the blog, I was waiting tables full-time. Now I do it part-time, and I write, and I do some other things. So, but I keep my foot in the door at the restaurant because somehow I started this blog about the horrors of waiting tables, and now it's become my career, so I have to keep waiting tables so I can keep this career going. It's
good.
Like
yeah.
Cat 22.
We're talking, by the way, to Darren Cardoza. His book is The Bitchy Waiter, and it's in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com right now if you'd like to go pick it up. It's a hoot. What do customers need to just stop doing when they sit down at the table?
Well, one thing they need to stop doing is enough with the cell phones.
Put them away, huh?
Put them away for a little bit because it can be, well, it's rude, I think, for one thing, to go out to dinner and sit on the phone while whoever you're out to dinner with is just watching you speak to someone else. And from the server's point of view, nothing is more irritating than going up to a table, taking the order, and as they are giving me what they want, their phone rings, and then they put their finger up to me and say, hold on a second, I have to take this. And then they take the phone call, expecting me to just stand there while they finish their conversation.
Like you don't have any other tables to wait on.
Right, yeah, you're the only one. Sure, absolutely. I'll stay here for 5 minutes while I listen to you talk to your great Aunt Fanny. Sure, no problem.
Yeah. Hey, do you ever wonder, after a particularly difficult night, if maybe waiting tables wasn't your cup of tea? Because I'll tell you, a lot of servers just don't understand how to make money. They really don't. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have to say, I've been doing it for 30 years, and I even though I bitch and complain about it, no one does anything for 30 years without at least liking it a little bit, whether they want to admit it or not. And even though my blog and my book is called The Bitchy Waiter, people who sit in my section would never consider me a bitchy waiter. I'm actually a very good server. So the book is written from the point of view of saying all the things that servers in general wish they could say out loud. So that's what the book is. But yeah, there are definitely people who should not be servers. I think I work with a couple.
Yeah, right. They're always there. And I seem to get them frequently.
Yes.
And every now and then I get this angel from heaven who, when I leave the tip, nobody really knew that waiter worked there. In fact, no one could even identify him. But he was there. He remembered everybody at the table, all 10 of us, without writing down the what we ordered, brought everything out, brought all the drinks, was very attentive. And when it was time to thank him in person, he didn't really work there.
Wow, it really was like an angel from heaven.
Yes, that actually happened to us.
Really?
Yeah.
That's creepy. I'm totally going to write a story about that now.
Oh, good. Call me anytime. And call the show anytime for sure. We want you to read the book, The Bitchy Waiter, Tales, Tips, and Trials from the Life in Food Service. Darren Cardoza, a pleasure to speak with you, and I'll take my check now.
It's on its way. I'll be right there. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah. I'm still asking for a free piece of cake, aren't you?
I never, ever reveal the birthday because then you get tortured with the horrible birthday singing at your table, which is to be avoided at all costs.
Happy birthday from all of us.
What do you mean that the waiter didn't actually work there?
He was an angel.
A ghost.
Nobody knew who he was.
Ghost waiter.
When I wanted to go thank him personally. No, I'm serious. And it was just the best waiter ever. Never wrote anything down, had everything nailed. It was awesome.
Was the restaurant even there?
Oh, right. All right. Hey, well, that's it for the first hour of the show. So much more to come, including Manny the Movie Guy from Coachella. And a guy who builds those tiny little houses you see on TV, where I can't imagine anybody wanting to live in them, but apparently they do. We'll find out why they do and why they sell. This guy should know, right? Because he builds them. That and more in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Next. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from experts, authors, and others, and we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. Some of the stories we have for you this hour. That guy, you know that guy at the fast food joint who asked for a water cup, and you know what he's going to do next. How much did it cost the FBI to hack into that iPhone? Manny the movie guy joins us from Coachella, and a guy who back in the day was one of the first to build tiny homes for people explains why, on Earth Day, you should consider living in a place the size of a broom closet. Those stories and a whole lot more. In this hour of the program, I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for listening. Brooke Peterson and Gonzo Greg Spillane are here with us today. And I can't be more pleased because, Brooke, you're going to tell me about that guy at the fast food restaurant, aren't you?
People just never cease to surprise me. So there's this guy. This is in Arkansas. He and two of his buddies go through the drive-thru, order some water with their food, I suppose. I just know they get some water. They park their car, go inside, dump the water, fill it up with some soda. And the manager sees this happening and confronts the guys and says, you know, dump the soda, guys. And two of them do, and they are fine. The third one is like, you know, not so much, mister. And he takes off with his soda, gets in the car. The manager follows them outside, blocks the car from leaving, gets hit by the car.
Nice.
Yes. And this is for soda. This is for soda.
Do we know what kind of soda? Was it Mountain Dew by any chance? Seems like.
Yeah, it could have been.
It might probably have been the
choice.
It
must be root beer because I know that's really hard to come by.
It is not.
Absolutely.
What are you talking about? Everybody's got root beer. Some of it has more soap in it than others. to make that foam.
Where are you getting your root beer?
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, they track this guy down in a bowling alley, and he gets arrested. And he gets arrested not for hitting this guy with a car, but for felony robbery.
Yes!
Of soda.
I love that, because I see this all the time, Brooke. I don't know, maybe you don't. But people, they go up, and because you get the, most places will give you a water cup for free. And then they go up to the soda thing, and it's not like they spend a lot of money on the soda, but that's where all their profit is. You know, they spend a penny on your cup of soda, and they charge you $1.50 for it. And so that's the profit making. That's where they're printing their money, is over at that soda fountain. And so they give you a free cup, which they had to pay for, that water cup, and then you go fill it with soda. You are totally trying to game the system, and you're a bit of a jerk. And
there
other people,
so
yeah.
So many things about this story that are just so perfectly in line. Fact one, what do we say? Arkansas.
Yeah.
And then soda, presumably Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
And then making a break for the bowling alley. I mean, it seems to have added up perfectly, you know?
Yeah.
So great when a plan comes together.
Gosh. And we apologize for stereotyping folks in Arkansas.
Right. Should have been Florida.
Yeah.
Florida right now is so ticked off. Arkansas, what are you doing? That's our bit.
Yeah.
Florida.
Brooke, I played high school basketball.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't great at it. I was, because I've been the same 6'2" since, I don't know, the ninth grade. And so when you're 6'2" in the ninth grade, they teach you how to be a center. And then by the time you get in high school, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th grade, 6'2" is the shortest guy on the team. So I didn't have the shorter guy skills. I had the tall guy skills, but the tall guys were all a foot taller than me, 5 to 12 inches taller than me. I don't know, let's put it in reality. But every now and then you see a guy on a high school team who is really something special, and
yes,
he goes straight to the top college, and from the top college he goes straight to the NBA, and it's just a joy to see somebody who is so skilled.
Absolutely. And you might even call it a prodigy. Everybody loves to be one of the first people to discover and witness a prodigy in the making. And there is a guy who's 6'9", named Jonathan Nicola. This is in Canada, but he was playing. He's South Sudanese, playing in Canada, living at the high school coach's house.
Uh-oh.
I guess presumably staying on his couch, if you will.
Nothing ever good comes out of that, but okay, fine. That's another story. Go ahead.
Well, it sounds kind of like a universal movie in the making, actually. Anyway, so this turns out this guy is really talented, 6'9". He's kind of like the next big thing in Canada, at least in this particular region. And only thing is that he had a little secret.
He's a high school guy. He's got a secret. What is it?
He's 30 years old.
Uh-oh. Flunked a couple of years, got held back. What happened?
He's Marty McFly.
You know, I don't even think there's a reason like that. I think he just came to Canada, started high school, decided that he was actually very good and very talented and could, you know, beat those little young whippersnappers and just happened to be able to skate past as a high school person.
So wait, was he going to class, like taking algebra and stuff, or just showing up for the games?
I would presume he was in school. Can they even do that? Can they just show up for games?
I don't know, right? Who's? Yeah.
It says an 11th grader. He was an 11th grader on a student visa.
Wow. So maybe in Sudan, they don't keep real good birth records.
30 years old.
Wow. That's crazy.
So prodigy, not so much.
So when that secret came out, all the 10th grade girls who had been dating him said, what?
Your prom date is off.
Yeah. No, parents find out. Even right. In Canada, they're going to be upset.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Even in Canada.
Don't you know?
They never get upset.
All right. So you know what? Everybody's been following the news, and ever since those two nutcases in San Bernardino started shooting up people, presumably in the name of Allah or some other kind of misguided reason for shooting up people, all right? There's never a good reason for shooting up people, is there? But anyway, they did it just the same. And then the big dust-up between the FBI and Apple came out because the FBI said, hey, give us the keys to unlock this iPhone, and Apple said no.
Talking about this all the time, just a couple of few weeks ago. Yeah. And Apple was adamant that they weren't going to do that. It would compromise the security of everybody's phone.
Sure.
And so the FBI went and said, hey, look, we'll just go find some hackers and we'll get into that phone because obviously it's got to contain some amazingly important information that'll help us prosecute this case. So they did, as we heard about, a week ago, they found a guy or some hacker and they said, could get us into this phone. For that, they paid $1 million.
Really?
To get into that guy's...
Can you say that with your pinky finger pointed to the corner of your mouth?
Actually, every time I say $1 million, it's kind of a habit that I have. So they paid $1 million to get into this iPhone, and you're not going to believe what they found.
Well, oh, really? What?
Nothing.
Oh!
not a damn thing. I think maybe they found... Yeah, he called Domino's last week or something. Maybe that was about it. It's just about the extent of what they found.
I am so getting into the hacker business.
There's maybe some cute cat videos from YouTube. I don't know. Yeah, there was nothing.
Nothing.
And even to begin with, I guess the software that they ended up using only works on what they call, somebody was quoted as saying, a narrow slice of some phones.
Yeah.
Certain iPhones, like the 5C, you got to have iOS 9, so there's a possibility that it might not have worked at all. Regardless, I guess they got in, but got absolutely no information out of it.
Now, here's the irony of all of this, Greg. If they were trying to get into my phone, they would find more stuff on my phone than they did on that guy's phone, right?
the stuff they'll find on my phone, nobody wants to see.
No.
Yeah, you don't want to. I don't. You know, the fact that you're in my text list, Phil, you might be shocked one day. I try to be careful, but sometimes drunk texting late at night.
Yeah.
I love you.
You accidentally add me to the one of those groups that you pay extra for. Yes. Hey, here's a question for you. Is Charlize Theron still one of the most beautiful Hollywood actresses? Yeah? Mike is shaking his head yes.
I wouldn't say no.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Ageless beauty, one of those. Well, when she looks into that mirror on the wall, is she the fairest of them all? We'll hunt down her competition, her younger competition, when Manny the Movie Guy joins us in the next segment of Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports... Speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the Day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. It's time to see what the movie companies have in store for you at your local Cineplex. Joining us now, with flowers in his hair, a guy who can rock short shorts and a tie-dye crop top with the best of them, KMIR-TV Palm Springs movie reviewer Manny the Movie Guy.
Have you been going through my closet again?
Busted, Phil.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the uniform you have to wear when you go to the big Coachella music festival.
Big Coachella. It's Coachella Part 2, everyone.
Yeah. And I've been telling people all day long that you are going to report to us from Coachella. Well, you always report to us from Coachella, don't you?
Yes, I do. But you know what, though? I am so excited because next week, it's Stagecoach. You know that. It's Coachella. But
oh, and you can't wait to bring out the cowboy boots. Is that right?
I can't wait to see them cowboys and spank the little Indiana boy in me.
Oh. All right. Good. And so have you had it up to here with all the Coachella folks that have been trampling
I'm
lawn?
I'm leaving Coachella this weekend.
Yeah. All right. Good. All right. So let's talk movies, shall we? Since there's nothing to say about Coachella other than your wardrobe. Now, I did ask a question before we went to the break. When Charlize Theron looks into the mirror on the wall and asks if she's the fairest of them all, she is pretty hot, I got to say. But there are a lot of people in this... is this a prequel to the Cinderella movie?
Well, it's sort of. It's a sequel and a prequel.
Is Cinderella or is it the other princess?
Snow White.
Snow White. There you go. Snow White.
Right,
thanks.
Right. And really, honestly, this is a sequel we didn't ask for nor really care about. The original Snow White and the Huntsman made north of $300 million worldwide, so there you go. But what's missing is Snow White herself, a.k.a. Kristen Stewart, who lived happily ever after Twilight, apparently.
Yeah.
In this new convoluted tale, which is really a reminiscent of Frozen, by the way, we have Emily Blunt as Freya, the Ice Queen. She brings her sister Charlize Theron's Ravina back to life so they can conquer the Enchanted Forest, but only if they can defeat the Huntsman. Chris Hemsworth returning to the role, and he has a secret lover, Jessica Chastain's Sarah. But
why does he have to keep her secret? I mean, I would tell the world if Jessica Chastain was my lover.
Right.
No, seriously, though, I mean, there are times when every 5 minutes, the song Let It Go keeps on. I keep on hearing it, you know?
Is Jessica Chastain Snow White, or is she somebody else? Is the Huntsman, is Jessica Chastain
on
the...
Kristen Stewart?
Yeah.
No, she's different. She's Sarah. She's totally different. She's not Snow White.
But Hemsworth is the same one who went off with Snow White. Is that right?
No.
Oh, it's a different one.
Are you talking about Chris Hemsworth?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they kind of alluded to it, but not really. This one, here's the premise. The love affair between Chris Hemsworth's Huntsman and Sarah is the prequel to the film.
All right. So Sarah is the stepping stone, and Snow White is the cornerstone.
Pretty much.
Okay.
There you go. But Snow White's wearing the crown now, so she's the queen. This is from new director Cedric Nicholas Troyan, and his inexperience shows, like most new directors, the sequel is visually intriguing, but that's about it. The cast, the talented cast at that, tried their best to lift the tale, but to no avail.
All right. So back in the day, I mean, I'm old enough to remember this, that President Richard Nixon had a meeting with Elvis Presley. And it lasted about 5 minutes, and apparently that was enough to make an entire movie out of it.
Well, yeah, you remember there's, you know, the iconic picture of them, and apparently that's the most requested photo from the archive. And so they said, the filmmakers behind Elvis and Nixon said, oh, let's make a movie. But how's this for a cast, though? Michael Shannon, you may remember him from Man of Steel as General Zod. He's Elvis. And the great Kevin Spacey is Nixon.
Of course he is. Yes.
Yeah, if you're looking for authenticity and impersonation, this movie is not for you. But if you're looking for a film that has great performances, then Elvis and Nixon it is. Now, the setting, of course, is that one December morning, like what Phil talked about in 1970, when Elvis entered the White House, showing up on the lawn. He requested a meeting with President Nixon. You may have seen the infamous photo, the King of Rock and Roll shaking hands with the most powerful man in the world. But you see, Elvis feels the youth of America is slipping away from him, and now he wants a badge so he can go undercover and save America from the evil of drugs, one kid at a time.
And in the meantime, he's high out of his mind while he's talking to the president,
yeah, but
right?
He was on prescription drugs, so that's
right?
Different, Phil.
Oh, okay.
7 years later. But really, if you're looking for something deep or thought-provoking like the Oscar-nominated Frost Nixon, this is not it. But this one, though, is entertaining because of the talented cast.
Oh, yeah, Johnny Knoxville is in this movie.
Yeah, Johnny yep. Knoxville is in there. Yeah, it's in the film as well. And Colin Hanks, Tom Hanks' boy.
Oh, speaking of Tom Hanks... Maybe you know something about this. I saw a commercial. I don't recall what we were watching, but I saw a commercial for a movie with Tom Hanks in it. And my wife and my kids all said, what? A hologram for the... What the heck is that? Hologram for the King? Is that what it's called?
That's right. It's a hologram for... It's very good. It is a very, very independent film. They really... I mean, I'm surprised you even saw a commercial for it. You know, it's a limited release, but... I enjoyed this film. Tom Hanks, he's always dependable in the film. This one is based on Dave Eggers' novel of the same name. Tom Hanks is Alan Clay. He's a washed-up businessman who is sent to Saudi Arabia to secure the IT contract for a high-tech hologram communication device. Ooh. In the first few minutes of the film, it pays homage to Talking Heads' just once in a lifetime, but in reverse. He finds himself with no beautiful house or no beautiful wife. They're all gone. So off to Saudi Arabia he goes.
Yeah, how about that?
I love the director of this film. Written and directed by Tom Twyker, the guy who gave us a fantastic Run, Lola, Run. Have you guys seen that movie?
No. Should we?
You have to see it. It's a brilliant, brilliant film about Lola running from the mob. And that's it. It's like three different takes on it. Three different ways of how she ran away.
So she's got endurance.
It's smart film. This one is not in the same vein, of course. This one is more of a dramedy, but it speaks volumes on global economy and its impact on our lives.
You know, I'm just looking at the cast here, and wow, it's great to see that Tom Skerritt is finally, since Top Gun, making another movie.
Right? You're right. But yeah, when I saw him, I'm like, oh my God, it's Tom Skerritt.
Has he been in any movies since Top Gun?
No. Well, he was in Steel Magnolias.
Oh, yeah.
Did you miss that one, Phil?
I did. Yes,
you didn't
I didn't
rush
catch
out
that
for Steel Magnolias.
Yeah. Tom Skerritt, Steel Magnolias. I don't know why I remember. Probably because of all the women characters, you remember Tom Skerritt.
Yeah. Wow. Yes. Wow. How about that? Good to see him working. All right. Well, it's always good to talk to you, too, Manny. MannyTheMovieGuy.com. Any special interviews on there that we should maybe you yelling at some Coachella people to get off your lawn?
Thank you. I will post my interviews for Mother's Day and Ratchet and Clank, the animated film that's opening next week. And I am actually this is what I'm excited about. I'm interviewing them tomorrow. The cast of Keanu, Key and Peele from Comedy
Central. Yes, that could. All right, that's going to be good.
It should be fun.
This will be one of your third or fourth video to go viral. I promise it will.
I hope so. Yeah, can I tell you a secret real quick?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Most comedians are not funny at all in person.
Oh.
I'm not going to name names.
But no, I know what you're talking about. I met Carl Reiner and Steve Martin, and they were both about as downcast and deadpan as you could possibly imagine somebody being. They were just looking at their shoes when they were walking around.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they're saying DJs aren't very interesting. Maybe that's part of what
that
they're
saying.
Yeah.
Or some little Filipino guy is not interesting either.
Oh, come on. Who are you kidding? Manny the Movie Guy, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next week.
I'm off with my boots. See y'all.
Yeehaw! Yeehaw! Oh, man.
And Manny was never seen again.
No. Oh, I forgot to ask him if he owns at least one pair of Daisy Dukes. He probably does, right?
Oh, without a doubt.
No? Oh, gosh.
Oh, nobody goes to Coachella without their Daisy Dukes.
No, they don't. Hey, here's a little tidbit of trivia that you probably didn't know. You know the country of Monaco, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right there off of the south of France. It's its own kingdom. And
Grace Kelly
was the queen of Monaco. Or was she a princess? Was she the princess?
I think princess. I'm
yeah.
not sure.
Yeah. All right.
Let's say queen. I like queen better.
Yeah, because the prince was running the joint, and she was the princess. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Monaco is so small
that it could fit into Central Park in New York City twice.
Wow.
That's how small Monaco is.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's tiny.
I know it. And if you ever see pictures of the little bay there that they have in Monaco where the people park their boats, you will see the biggest yachts on the planet. And they're all parked right there in the little little harbor there at Monaco.
As opposed to what you see in Central Park.
Exactly.
Or the biggest,
rats.
What have you.
The biggest rats.
The biggest rats. Can you imagine if they moved Monaco into Central Park? How exciting would that be?
No, it wouldn't be exciting at all.
I think it would be magnificent.
Hey, we heard the news this week that they're going to put Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not for years still, though, right?
No.
Yeah, it's four more years or something.
I guess
It's
a good idea. What do you think, Gonzo?
Yeah, I think it's. Can you spot me? Can you spot me a tubby till Friday? Next Friday. I just need a tubby.
A tubby.
Yeah. A Teletubby. Have you seen that? You've seen those TV shows where people want to buy a house, a really tiny house, but for some reason they want to live in, you know, like 150 square feet, something like that. I mean, the size of a walk-in closet. Really
sounds
tiny.
Like my apartment.
Yeah. I am so curious about this, not because I want to live in a tiny house, but I want to know who the people are who do and what the allure is of living in a house that tiny. And we'll talk with a guy who's been building these houses since people have been building those houses, and he joins us live in the next segment of Phil Hewlett and Friends. I tell you, I do not get the whole notion of living in a itty-bitty tiny house.
I don't either, but they're beautiful. Have you been watching the TV shows?
Yeah, I know. I've seen them on TV.
They're gorgeous.
Yeah, they have
all
kinds of amenities. I mean, it is like you want one like you want a puppy, right? Because it's cute.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean,
and then it gets old, and then I have to walk it, and I'm just like, meh.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. I want to get into why people are doing this, what's the appeal, and joining us live is a guy who should know, because it's his business to build these little homes. In fact, he's a pioneer in this line of business. He's one of the first guys to have done this. Jim Wilkins is the CEO of Tiny Green Cabins. Welcome to the program, sir.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great because we want to understand this. What exactly do you build?
We build tiny houses on wheels. They're called nowadays they're called TOWS, TOWS, tiny houses on wheels.
Oh.
And they're ranged in size from any place from 65 square feet, 64 square feet up to in our shop 325 square feet.
My wife has a 65 square foot closet.
there's Oriental rugs bigger than 65 square feet.
Oh yeah, that's right. Now, let's see. How do you calculate square feet again? It's length times width, right? So, like in a typical house, a 10x10 room, which is pretty standard, that's the room the kids live in, is 100 square feet. Is that how that works?
That's right. That's right, and that's pretty much. The size of what the IRC regulates as a habitable room per square feet for a bedroom, 10 by 10.
Yeah. All right. So now you know your business and you know your customers. So help us understand, why would somebody choose to live in a house that small?
This is freedom. Freedom is a key word for a lot of people that like to live small, like to live tiny. Also, sustainability. And they both go hand in hand with each other because the tiny house you can build for any place from, if you do it yourself, from $20,000 all the way up to, if you hire somebody to do it, $100,000. Mm. Seems to be a range of $60,000.
Yeah.
And if you figure out your average house size in a mortgage situation, over a 30-year loan, you're probably paying close to $1 million for that. For your home.
Yeah.
In a tiny house, you can build probably 10 of them just off the interest savings.
No. Oh, okay. Well, there's the selling point. Now, how many of these people that you've sold homes to have you discerned after getting to know them a little bit that perhaps they've just given up and they realize that they will spend the rest of their lives alone?
I want to do it.
No, you don't. Do you really?
I do. Because you know what? They can be on wheels, and they can take it wherever the heck you want to go and park yourself in front of a meadow or on a mountain. Or
Well, that's a good
right?
question, Jim.
Do you like the guy from Up?
Can you just park it, or do you have to own the land that you park it on? What are the regulations on that, Jim?
The regulations right now are basically it falls into the category of RVs. Although tiny house people have a tendency to not like that word RV because RVs denote temporary living and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But a tiny house is built the same way as a house. And so they'll last all 50 years, 100 years going forward.
Yeah.
Whereas an RV lifespan is about 18 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So you can take your RV. The tiny house wherever life takes you.
What kind of amenities do you pack into these tiny houses?
When they first started out, it was the bare essentials. You maybe had a sink that dropped into the wastewater into a bucket and you took it outside and got rid of it. You had
Joy.
Maybe what I call a kitty litter box. You use sawdust in the box and in the bucket, and you pooped in the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And you filled it with sawdust and took it out and got rid of it after about a week's worth of use or something like that.
Really?
You're losing Brooke. You're losing.
Yeah, I'm gone. I'm gone.
Less time
than
a week, I think.
But the amenities now are, a lot of them are state-of-the-art. They're packing everything there from heating to washer and dryers to air conditioning. There's even people that are very interested in water generators that will capture the water moisture out of the air and put it into a container that you can use it for drinking water, potable water,
that's something.
Things like that.
That's high tech.
They can be very high tech anymore.
How about a composting toilet if you want to grow your own veggies that are near the tires of your house? Do they have those too? A composting toilet?
They have composting toilets. They have incinerating toilets. Some people prefer the composting, and some prefer the incinerator type, where it's like clean cycle on an oven where it runs at 500 to 800 degrees. It just burns all the poop, all liquid, and all you wind up with is an ash at the tail end. So you can take it out and dispose of it. It's a lot easier to dispose of.
Now, I'm thinking when you have the guys over to play cards and somebody excuses themselves to use your high-tech toilet, I mean, any noise you make or any aroma that emits from whatever it is you're doing in there, I mean, the card game is over, isn't it?
No.
Isn't it?
Not among real friends.
Okay. All right. Now,
I have a fan in there like any other normal place.
Now, on this,
right?
Today's Earth Day, Jim, and is the frame of mind for a lot of people, look, I have a tiny house, and I'm making a tiny footprint, and I'm helping the environment, and maybe the building materials you put into this help the environment as well. I don't know. Can you speak to that at all?
It is now. It when it first started out, tiny houses, it wasn't so much about the environment. It was more so about debt and survivability and freedom from, so you didn't have the mortgage and stuff that your monthly payments and the high costs. It gave you freedom to travel, freedom to do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, it's grown since 2008. Green was almost a dirty word back in 2008. And now it's a very popular term, and people are gravitating towards it because they're looking at the environment and how they affect the environment and living tiny creates a situation that is sustainable, not for only for them, but for the environment and future generations.
How many of these do you build a year, Jim?
We build about 3 to 4 a year in that range.
And you're just one company out of a whole bunch of them that does this now, right?
That's correct. When I first started in 2008, there was something like 12 companies nationwide, and now their last count was that I did a count on them was about 160, 180, and they pop up every spring.
So the demand obviously is there. That is something else. So a lot of people are going this way, and that is just amazing to me. TinyGreenCabins.com
is the website for Jim's company, and there are all kinds of great photos of these homes. And if you're at all interested in it, I suggest you work with Jim's company because he knows
They're
what
beautiful.
He's doing. Yeah,
are they solar powered?
Yes, we have solar panels. We run the gauntlet. The last 2 years, it's all everything that we put out have had solar panels on them.
Yeah,
gotcha. Cool.
Jim Wilkins,
I want mine to be nuclear powered.
Nuclear. Jim Wilkins, thank you so much for talking to us about tiny houses. And again, everybody visit his website, tinygreencabins.com. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right, now Brooke.
I would tie so many balloons to mine.
Yeah.
Tie them up.
Brooke, I want you to think about this now because it's hard to believe that, for me, I have to believe that the feeling wears off over time. And maybe this is just me, but I don't know if everybody would be like this, but it would be a couple of weeks after buying this thing, I'd be lying in my bed looking at the ceiling, which is a few inches away from my nose, and I'd be saying to myself, what the hell have I done?
I don't know. Well, one thing is, a lot of these structures sort of go up, you know, more so than they are in length and width. And so you have lofts and staircases, and you can do these sort of gothic sort of arched roofs to where you can actually stand up straight.
And so you don't think that love and feeling would wear off after a little bit of time, huh?
I think it would have to be like my second vacation type.
Yes.
I don't think I could live there full time.
So I wonder how many people call Jim up after they buy the house and they build the house for him and they say, hey, Jim, can I return this?
if your husband's a man spreader, it's probably not the home for you.
That's right. Yeah. Too much space, dude. Too much space.
Oh, gosh. All right. Don't do it, Brooke. Please.
I love the freedom, though. The idea that you can just sort of go wherever you want.
You'll never date again.
I don't think that's true. I think they'd be knocking on my tiny door.
Just can live in there with all your cats.
Yeah.
in the cat box.
And when you realize that people are living longer these days, oh, it's going to be a living hell for you. All right, we have a bunch of stories for our final segment, including what have we done on this Earth Day to one of the great wonders of the world, and Greg's going to tell us about that. And that and more next on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Welcome back. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. And I'm looking at a map of Australia, and off the coast of Queensland in the Coral Sea is one of the most magnificent things. If you ever go scuba diving and you have an opportunity to go witness this. I'm sorry. It might be too late.
Yes. The largest living thing on Earth, not Oprah. See what I did there?
Yeah.
The Great Coral Reef is like now
the Great Barrier Reef. The
Great Barrier Reef. Yeah, 93% dead.
No.
Yeah, it's really horrible.
I haven't been there yet, and so it's by the time I get there, it's going to be gone.
Yeah, probably.
Why? Why? And are people trampling it or what?
Well, it's part of it. It's there's a lot to do with it is pollution. But a lot of it is that thing that's not happening, the global thing. Global warming.
Yes.
The thing, yeah, that
you,
myth.
You denier you.
Right. There's obviously no signs that that's having any effect on the Earth, apart from this giant reef is what was once vibrant and alive is now like 93%, like all they call it bleaching.
Yeah.
So the coral turns white.
Mm-hmm.
And unless it recovers from that, and it, as far as we know, it's not likely to. It's dead, and that's going to have devastating effects on the ecosystem, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
In that part of the world, it's, you know, everything's a balance in the ocean, and obviously things are out of whack. So, yeah, partially climate change. El Nino has sped it up as well because of the changing temperature. Yeah. So,
can we blame Papua New Guinea at all?
Sure, why not? I say yes.
Just like to say Papua New Guinea.
I think it's best. So yeah, not it's bad times for the reef.
Wow.
Yeah, that's sad. It really is sad. You've brought us down, man.
Hey, that's what I'm here for, guys. Anytime.
I don't know what to do now.
Well, I don't know. We could talk about something fun. How about this lady in is it Yellowstone? Who has a particular skill for calming savage beasts.
Oh, my God. People are crazy. There's a woman in Yellowstone who decides to walk up on a sleeping bison and start petting it. She just starts walking up. Yeah, she just, you know, with the bison.
Cute doggy.
A bison that can gore you and kill you out of nowhere unexpectedly. Just, you know, take you away.
Bison are moody animals. Moody.
They are. Yeah. And they're huge. And they're powerful. And they're scary.
That's like a buffalo, right? A bison is a buffalo?
Yeah.
Right? Am I right? Or am I?
No, they're different.
Stoned.
They're a little bit different.
They're similar.
One has
right,
two
okay.
humps. In the island off the coast of California, one of the islands on the Channel Islands chain is Catalina, and they have a herd of bison there. And when you get a tour of the island in a truck or a dune buggy or whatever it is they take you around in, they always admonish you to not even stare at the bison very long because they'll charge the truck.
You're mm-hmm. thinking of the Jungle Cruise, where the hippopotamus wiggles his ears and then they squirt you with water. That's what you're thinking of.
No, I'm not. Anyway, so what happened with this lady who made
well, she got
poor judgment?
Really, really lucky. She got lucky. She ended up walking away, and luckily she had the sense to walk away slowly and calmly, but she did walk away with her back to the thing, so I'm not sure how smart that was either. And everybody around her... taking video. I think there was some people there are presuming this person was her boyfriend or whoever taking video from a much safer, longer distance, mind you.
This is the last. Finally, I'm going to get rid of her. Since I don't know what to I'll break her heart if I have to break up with her, but maybe this is a better way.
We'll let the bison handle
it. Good idea.
So she sits a nice bison, and she's petting it on the head. Is that what she does?
Yeah, she's petting it. Well, from the video, you're sort of watching from the back of the bison. You can see her sort of facing the bison. So presumably she's, like, petting, like, on the head or cheek or whatever. Like, she's right up in there. And the bison at one point, because he's kind of snoozy and dozy, lifts his head up against her hand. And it's like, oh, you're thinking, this is it. This is it. And
they're just checking the show fun page. And look, our munchkins have been at it already. Our web munchkins, and it,
there's
the video.
Yeah, you have to check this out.
The video is
right
there.
She got so lucky. She got so lucky.
Oh, gosh. I'll say. That's a crazy lady.
Crazy lady.
Let's go home to her cats. Oh, while we're talking about cats, how about dogs? You have a dog story for us. We haven't had a dog story in some time.
I know, and this is a great dog story. So I guess you've heard of these stories where animals get separated and then they traverse the entire country trying to find their owners, and they do. And well, this is a real-life story, something similar to this in the sense that a long-lost dog, this dog was separated from its family for 2 years. 2 years, and they are reunited unexpectedly and completely randomly. The mom of this family was meeting a friend at a shopping center in their local area and decided to kill some time at the animal shelter and is walking up and down the kennels, and she sees this dog that she recognizes as their long-lost dog that they've been looking for the past 2 years just sitting there. And they had given up after a year. They had looked for it for a year, had given up thinking, you know, he'd found a good home somewhere, hopefully. And boom, bada boom, bada bing. It's like their dog is just sitting there. And apparently the dog hadn't even been there that long. And they had found it sort of on the streets. But he was in pretty good health, pretty good condition. So somehow or another, he was getting by and making do. But et voila, they have their dog back. And apparently she looks at the dog and she says, Buddy Jack. And he just starts jumping up and down. And it was, you know, instant recognition. Although she had to go home and she got her husband to bring it back. Like, is this our dog? This is our dog. And
meanwhile, the husband's like, oh, wow, we just got the stench out of the carpet. Damn it. Get off the couch. Bad dog.
Hey, Greg, you know, when you go up to the state of Washington, everything's green. Everything seems like folks are on the same page environmentally. You know, everybody's happy about the environment and all that, but then you hear that they've got a serious leaking problem up there.
There is some leakage. Yes, Washington leading the nation in nuclear stuff up there. They got actually there's this place called the the Hanford site, and they brewed up some of the original plutonium for the bomb in World War II for Nagasaki.
Wow.
And they've been cranking out plutonium there since the olden days.
Mm-hmm.
But when you make it, obviously, there's leftover goo that you have to put in a tank, and they put it in these big double-wall tanks thinking, well, that'll be safe. You know, it's double-wall. It'll be good forever. Guess what's leaking?
The double walls.
Yeah, that's it's oozing into the so from the inner. It's out of the inner wall already in one of these tanks, and they have, I don't know, hundreds of them.
Yikes.
Some of them underground and just upstream from, you know, the river.
Yeah,
the Columbia River. So there's a bit of a situation there in Washington. They initially discovered this. The TV station did a big investigative thing. I don't know, like 3 years ago. And like the government, they ignored it, said that's not happening for about 3 years or so.
Yeah.
And now it's about to panic level there at the Hanford site. Well, in that, Washington.
We'll keep an eye on that. And
Happy Earth Day, everybody.
Right, exactly. And there was a strange discovery right up the street from there at somebody's house, right?
Right, because uranium's a, well, actually, it occurs fairly normal. It's, you know, it's something you can find in Washington in the ground. And there's this old woman called up the fire department on Thursday morning and said, hey, I got some things. My husband just passed away, and I'm cleaning up the basement. And I was down there, and I've got some blasting caps and some leftover uranium. Can you help me out?
Yeah.
And there was a pause on the other end of the line at the fire department where they said, this hasn't happened before.
Yeah, but we don't really know how to remove that. Really,
but we'll come over. And she's like, okay. And so she takes these they look like rocks of uranium.
Uh-huh.
She puts them in a used peanut butter jar in a paper bag, leaves them on the porch, and splits to go join her quilting group while the entire neighborhood gets shut down by the hazmat team so they can clean out the uranium from her house.
And that crew from E.T. shows up and plastic sizes the entire neighborhood.
Pretty much.
How is she still alive?
Yeah. With uranium under her house?
Yeah, well, for years and years, presumably.
I don't know.
Hopefully she's okay. But I guess her husband was a miner, and that's why.
And her friends in the quilting group, they all have a third arm growing out of their back.
Right, there's all these weird...
All right, let's cap off our Earth Day conversation here with the top Earth Day pickup lines. See if this will work on you, Brooke.
This is a thing?
Want to watch Leonardo DiCaprio movies and chill? Are you a fossil fuel because you're making my temperature rise? Why should Earth be the only thing that gets some lovin' today? That work? Would that work for you?
No.
When I look at you, Brooke, all I can think of is having responsible sex that doesn't create another life on this already overcrowded planet.
That would do it.
Would it? Did it hurt when you fell through the ozone layer? No, that doesn't work.
No.
I like your Bernie for President t-shirt. I bet it would look great on the floor next to my bed.
I like that one.
And here's one more for you. Smog really brings out the green in your eyes. Do you like those?
No.
Happy Earth Day, everybody. We love your comments. Click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com, or you see the little blue tab, click on that. If there's a microphone on your computer, for absolutely free, you can leave us a voicemail. We're on Twitter at Faf Show, PHAF Show. Facebook.com, look for us there. If you listen to us on iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment and a review. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson. Our theme song is performed and composed by Russ Monzen. For Brooke and for Gonzo Greg and all the friends, I'm Phil. Can't wait to talk to you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.